Hello.
Good evening. I'm conducting a political poll for public radio. Can you take a moment to answer a few questions?
Sure.
Do you take opinion polls seriously or not very seriously?
It depends. Some are good and some aren't.
Well, should I characterize that as a seriously?
Well, it depends on who's doing the poll, and I mean, you know, some of them are good polls and some of them are not good, so it just sort of depends. I mean, if the ones that are done by qualified people using good techniques, I take them seriously. It's just there are a lot of them that are just nonsense.
Well, my question doesn't allow for any other answers besides seriously or not seriously.
Well, I would say put seriously then.
All right.
Everybody on tape? Good. You're taping right now? All right.
From Seattle, the Earth on the Air Radio Works presents Earth on the Air.
How it is out here. What's up, Jim?
During the next half hour, Earth on the Air's independent contributors look at a few of the reasons the American public is increasingly alienated from the political process.
A lot of people are saying we need a new breed of candidate for elected office. We'll see some of the roadblocks these non-mainstream politicians encounter when they do decide to run.
Also, a call for political leaders who are more intuitive, reflective, feminine,
and more. First, join a political critic as she confirms firsthand her suspicions about one of modern politics' most influential practices.
My name is Loel Harvey. I'm an average, underemployed, college-educated American. I've been concerned about how passive a process politics has become and how much opinion polls have to do with that. Opinion polls give the impression that they've mapped out what's going to happen, so there's no point in any of us getting involved. I started to wonder, just how scientific are polls? How do they get their results? I was curious, so I decided to conduct a little unscientific poll of my own and found out some pretty eye-opening things. The first thing I learned, a lot of people refuse to participate at all.
No.
Good evening. I'm conducting a political poll for public radio.
No, I don't believe so. Hello?
Good morning. I'm conducting a political poll for public radio.
I don't do anything on the phone.
I'm late for work. I'm sorry.
It'll take less than a minute.
I really can't. Sorry.
I'm sorry. I'm busy now.
Good evening. I'm conducting a political poll for public radio. This conversation is being recorded. Can you take a moment to answer a few questions?
Hello? Hello?
Yes, I'm conducting a political poll for public radio.
I don't understand the English.
Oh, all right. Thank you.
40% of my 55 contacts wouldn't answer my questions. It didn't help matters that my poll was being recorded, but I understand that a 40% refusal rate is not unusual in the polling business. I picked my participants at random from the phone book, but random phoning isn't as impartial as it might seem. Political commentator Michael Parenti, speaking on his lecture circuit, has some thoughts on this.
The sampling of these polls is biased to favor the more affluent and generally the more conservative because it's a telephone poll. A telephone poll excludes 2.5 million homeless, unless you're calling a payphone in the corner and want some guy to be there. 1 million incarcerated in this country. One out of every 240 Americans is in jail. They don't have phones. 1 million institutionalized in retirement homes, mental institutions, settlement houses, halfway homes, veterans hospitals. 10 million of the rock bottom of the 35 million people living below poverty levels don't have telephones or have had them and had them disconnected because they can't keep up payments. So it's not a poll. Poll means head. A poll tax is a tax on every head. Polling is the counting of heads. It's a counting of phones, a telepoll. And the distribution of phones is highly skewed toward those with money. More phones per capita, the higher up you go in income. It's not uncommon for affluent households to have only three people in it, but two different telephone numbers, or one person and one telephone. And it's not uncommon for low-income households, which are doubled up and tripled up. I can tell you about an African-American family next door to me in the brownstone, three generations, and then uncle and brother-in-law had to come in because they were homeless, evicted from their home. There was about 17 people. All right, that house with 17 people had one telephone. So that house was maybe 15 or 16 times less likely to be polled than the affluent home that had two telephones. Actually 32 times, because you got two telephones in the home. You get what I'm saying anyway.
So a poll can be skewed even before a single question is asked. But back to my poll. The next thing I figured out was how significantly I could influence my results by altering the wording of a question. Here's what I asked half of my participants.
Should protecting the environment be a national priority?
Yes. Yes.
Naturally.
All right, I'll take that as a yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes.
Should protecting the environment be a national priority?
Oh, international, yeah.
That question got a 100% positive response, just as I'd planned. But suppose I had a sponsor for my poll who wanted some negative responses. Then I'd add some buzzwords like this.
Should government protect the environment even if it costs jobs and money?
I think they're ruining it. I think they should leave it alone.
Well, I'm not quite sure whether that's a yes or
a no.
Should government protect the environment even if it costs jobs and money?
Yes.
No.
No.
I'd say no.
Yes, I guess.
Ooh, that's a bad one. I would think so.
No.
I got a 48% negative response on that one. Now, you might argue that those two questions weren't asking the same thing. Right, but if I were a professional politician, I'd pick the question that best fit my agenda and turn the results into a barrage of 10-second sound bites. Ask me to comment on a poll I don't like. I'll look you in the eye and tell you I don't put much stock in polls. Here's another interesting point. Polls ask simplistic questions about very complicated issues. They force people to make choices they probably wouldn't make anywhere except in a poll. Listen to some of these responses to my next question and decide how seriously we should take the results.
Second question, do you feel we're making more or less progress these days on environmental issues than we were 10 years ago?
I'd say a little bit more, but I don't know if there are any degrees of it, are there?
Well,
it's just a yes or no question.
More or less?
More.
Do you feel we're making more or less progress these days on environmental issues than we were 10 years ago?
I can't answer that. In some ways, yes, in some ways, no.
Well, my poll doesn't...
It doesn't allow me to say yes or no.
Which way do you lean, more or less progress? Would you like
well,
me to...
the word is progress. I'd say awareness, but not progress. So I'll say no.
Less progress?
Well, I'm thinking about the recent decision to allow logging, and that's...
Well, this is a general question about more or less progress today than 10
I'll
years
say
ago.
More.
More progress.
I don't know.
Well, my question doesn't allow for I don't know. Which way do you lean? Do you think?
I'll say yes. I don't make any progress at all.
Less progress then?
No.
All right.
I know you're on pins and needles, so here's the outcome. 33% said less, 67% said more. That's how the newspapers would have reported it. But obviously these results don't reflect the true complexity of the issue any more than the question did. So, what I'm learning is polls are biased, they're misleading, and I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that polls are steering the course of American politics.
Polling isn't just tapping into naturally forming opinions out there. Polling is being used to shape those opinions as well.
Lance Bennett is a political scientist at the University of Washington. He says we're in the midst of a participation crisis in this country.
People are being marketed to death, not just buying sports cars with new colors on them, but buying environmental policies that may not have any money behind them. And that has led to a sense of deep cynicism in this country.
Dr. Bennett says that polls used to be used to generate public debate. Now they've replaced it. Today, opinion polls are the centerpiece of public opinion. Some other expressions of public opinion, demonstrations, riots, protests, standing on soapboxes to speak out on street corners, those dimensions have been reclassified as things that are done largely by crackpots or even criminals. And what makes that especially dangerous, according to Dr. Bennett, is that polling is such a solitary exercise.
The whole experience, as your tapes here indicate, as your phone calls indicate, is this a very private experience, having an opinion these days. Somebody calls you up in the privacy of your own home, and you have the right to refuse to even talk to that person, and there's no responsibility attached to your opinion, even if you do talk to that person. Where's the public dimension of the opinion poll? There isn't one. Where's the action component? What are you doing about this opinion? Have you talked to other people? Have you really worked out a position that you share with other groups in society so you can actually go out and do something about the environment if you're worried about it?
Democracy is hard work. A first step we can all take to reclaim politics is to reclaim our opinions, voice them, hash them out in public. The next step is to act.
When's the last time you've been in the middle of a crowd like this, screaming for a political candidate or issue?
It's gonna be us. It's not Rodney King, it's us, all right? And
understand. If you're like most Americans, you're just too busy to get active in politics.
People's lives are very, very complex these days. You know, I was just reading the other day where one edition of the New York Times has as much information in it as a person was likely to get in his entire lifetime during the 17th century. It's sort of like things are happening so fast, our lives are very, very complicated. In most cases, people just feel that for them to be able to sit down and vote requires them to get a little bit more concerned and involved in who they're actually going to be voting for, and most people don't take the time, so they decide the whole process is meaningless anyways.
That's Kathy Allen. She runs an organization called Campaign Connection. Campaign Connection helps atypical alternative candidates get elected, women, people of color, gays and lesbians. Campaign Connection is convinced that a new breed of candidate will bring in a new breed of voter.
If you have this kind of diversity coming to the public, there is a public out there that at least is hearing something new. They're hearing something very fresh. They're hearing something, oh my goodness, honest. They're hearing honesty. And if they hear that honesty, the truth is that they're more likely to respond with, you know, maybe I will pay attention. Maybe I will not only vote, but maybe I'll even get involved. Maybe I'll even go to a rally. Maybe I'll even listen to what this person has to say.
Campaign Connection boasts pretty good results getting non-mainstream candidates elected to offices all up and down the West Coast. But especially when it comes to offices of nationwide significance, alternative candidates have a tough time being heard. Take this man.
This is my agenda for what I call the New American Security. New American Security not measured by the force of arms abroad, but by the strength of our institutions, our economy.
Do you recognize his voice? You should. He was one of the first candidates to run for president this year.
All of this is possible right now, but it's not possible unless you and I somehow make this damaged democracy of ours work again.
Larry Agron certainly has always been a long shot in this election, but in a time when the public is clamoring for new faces, intelligent, creative candidates who've been successful in other areas of life than Beltway politics, this former foreign policy think tank director, former mayor of Irvine, California, seems to deserve consideration. His endorsement by the U.S. Conference of Mayors should have catapulted him into the national debate, but Agron has spent his whole campaign just trying to be heard.
We filed a lawsuit against PBS, the McNeil Air News Hour. A lot of you probably saw me on the McNeil Air News Hour. Okay. I was on August 30th. Roger Mudd interviewed me at length. I was on a subsequent broadcast. When it came to the matter of debates, they said, well, now we think you're not newsworthy. I said, by what criteria? They said, well, it's our journalistic judgment. I said, why don't you let the American people decide that by way of debate? If I'm on the ballot in state after state after state, they have a right to hear my voice in debate. So we have hypocrisy, we have fraud at every level of institutional life in this country, and we're going to have to be the antidote to that very serious problem.
Agron says he's been shut out across the board by the media, by the Democratic Party leadership, and by the other candidates.
And as I said at South Dakota, when I fought my way into that debate, just as I fought my way into the U.S. Conference of Mayors debate in Washington, D.C., I said to people there, if I can't be heard, what makes you think that these candidates are going to listen to you? And if I can't be included in these debates, what makes you think that they're going to include you in the governance of our country? We either make our democracy work for everybody or it works for nobody. That's what this campaign is about.
When they come in the morning, it could be for you, or you, or you. When they come in the morning, it could be for any one of us, unless we decide to stand up against the forces of evil wherever we find them.
No, that wasn't paranoid, angst-ridden poetry. It was from a speech by a serious candidate for a newly created Louisiana congressional seat. Ife Williams says she has a right to be defensive. In 1986, she came out of nowhere to win the Democratic nomination for an Alexandria-area House seat. And right up until the general election, polls said she led her Republican opponent, Clyde Holloway, by an average of 20 points. Williams is convinced that the prospects of an outsider, African-American, female liberal lawyer winning a U.S. House seat was just too unsettling for the Louisiana establishment. She says they needed a way to derail the election, and the night before, she believes, they found it.
The night before the election, when I'm leading by the 20 points, my aircraft, which I was riding to try to get to a rally in each of the 15 parishes, counties, as you call them, we were stopping along the way, and on the very last stop, the last evening news, I was held up. My helicopter was pulled down over this Air Force base, and I was held at gunpoint. I was ordered out of the helicopter to stand there with my hands up. My staff members had to stand with their hands up. We were treated just like we were terrorists again, or Russians or somebody, you know, some enemy anyway. We were there right on past the evening news with our hands in the air. And the morning of the election, which was the following morning, the newspaper headline, sure enough, read, Williams is rude, abusive, and threatening to the military. They had the guns, but I was threatening. And that's what people who had not made up their minds about the election, they made up their minds on the basis of that story. They're going like, golly, we know this guy is a fool, but she attacks the whole Air Force. Wow, she must be crazy. I'm voting for the other fool, you know. And that was exactly the response they expected. I was the Democrat in a 90% Democratic district running against a right-wing, extreme right-wing conservative, and he won by 0.7% over me.
Williams still won more votes that day than any other African-American in Louisiana history. This year, the seat she's running for is largely made up of African-American constituents, and Williams says she expects to win.
You know what scares me? Well, it's not black people, or skinheads, or cops, or dirty-looking long hairs on their motorcycles chopped. It's not communities of Asians, or farm truckloads of aliens, or the drug-addicted loser that lives outside the law, or the lady executive cruiser with a gun beside her bra. You know what scares me? The IRS and the U.S. Department of Immigration. The FCC and the Federal Reserve Corporation to turn a would-be democracy into an incarcerated nation. The United Corporate Estates, transforming a cultural melting pot into a fragile glass of filtered water. Bland, homogenous, and arrogantly naive. You know what scares me? You know what really scares me? You trust them, not me.
Is our government out of touch with the people?
Our government's definitely out of touch with the people. It's only interested in money and bureaucracy.
Our government's out of control, my friend.
They seem not to be looking at what's where we want the money to go, where we want our tax dollars to go. Certainly not going where I want them to go.
The government's definitely out of touch with the people. I see the government as existing for a very, very small minority of the population, approximately 5%.
The democratic system, or the Democratic Party, supposedly was set up in order for the people to be able to make a change, the people to give it direction. But what's happening, and what's happened in the past, and what we're seeing so clearly in these days, is that the people don't have a say.
John Pagler is a campaign director for the Jerry Brown for President campaign. Sentiments like his are giving alternative candidates a boost these days, from Brown to Patrick Buchanan to H. Ross Perot to Carol Moseley Brown to Lynn Yackel. They're all being portrayed as candidates of the people.
I think there is a moment of opportunity here because even the press and the politicians in Washington have got one message so far out of this campaign, and it's that the people are mad.
Donella Meadows is an adjunct professor of environmental studies at Dartmouth University. Her latest book is Beyond the Limits, a study of global environmental politics. Meadows says the world is in too grave a state to throw up our hands. She says now, of all times, we need to try to communicate with our leaders.
Show up in their offices, write letters, talk about how mad you are and why, and what kind of democracy and what kind of leader you really want.
Otherwise, Meadows says, before we know it, democracy will be long gone in this country.
This is no longer democracy. This is a plutocracy. This is a country run by money and by the people who have money. And it isn't $1, one vote in a democracy. It's one person, one vote. We've got to get it back to that. I think there's no other important issue in America this year except campaign reform.
Meadows suggests full-scale finance reform, government sponsorship of TV ads to give candidates equal time, ballots that include the choice of none of the above to give voters a chance to demand fresh slates of candidates, more openings for third-party candidates, anything to give people from diverse walks of life more of a chance to serve their country.
So I want somebody who knows what it's like to be unemployed and know what it's like to work hard all your life for very little wage and know what it's like to live and try to raise a family in a third world country, know what it's like to be a school teacher or a coal miner or a farmer or you name it, and not just somebody who knows what it's like to be a white-collar paper shuffler.
By the time I get to be President of the United States, I will probably have some ideas.
That's what this election's about. And it's about your future.
Will not be another Vietnam.
Read my lips. No
news. Elena Morris is a Seattle career counselor. She speaks around the country about women's issues and transformational concepts of leadership. Morris believes that the leaders of our time tend to suffer from an overly masculine style that relies almost exclusively on reason and the scientific method.
I believe as the Chinese model of yin and yang. And the yin is the, that is traditionally called the feminine principle, is more the intuitive, the sensitive, the nurturing, the caring, the subjective, creative. While the yang is usually seen as the aggressive and the action-oriented and the goal-oriented and the realistic and the fact-oriented-based and thinking and the linear thinking and so forth and so on. And so it's two ways of perceiving reality, and it's two ways of dealing with the world. And we need to be able to use both. And women, especially in the last 20 years or so, have really become wonderfully balanced because by nature they are yin. And then as they go on to education, which is terribly yang because it is so linear and so rational, women then have to, in order to survive in school, develop a very strong yang. So women have become very yin-yang. But men who are yang-dominated, because they're male, and that's wonderful, but they go to school, they become yang-yang, and then they go on to graduate school, and they become yang-yang-yang. You know, so our leaders tend to be over-yanged.
Elena Morris says we need more of what she describes as transformative leaders who combine rational, linear thinking and action with reflection and ethical behavior.
There are times when the situation demands that you be aggressive and decisive and action-oriented, and you should be comfortable in being able to do that. Other times, the situation requires that you be reflective, that you be intuitive, that you be listening to the inner voice, that you be paying attention to the ethical dimensions and implications of what's going on. So, as appropriate, you should be able to use whichever one you need. And then when you get into really tough problems, you have to be able to use both of them together, which is called wisdom.
And who might be an example of such a leader? Elena Morris says Czechoslovakian president Václav Havel seems to fit the bill. A former playwright and prisoner of state, Havel has argued for a politics rooted in feeling, experience, and conscience. Not just the summary reports and opinion polls supplied daily to world leaders. A new turn of mind, Havel says, is required to address the urgent questions of our time, questions which are no longer about the security of nations, but about global survival. Dartmouth professor Donella Meadows.
We need to turn the whole world in a direction of sustainability, of living within the limits of the earth, within 20 to 30 years. And therefore, we need leadership of a dimension that really the human race hasn't yet seen ever. And we need it from all parts of the world at once. So this isn't something we wish we would have someday. This is something we must have now.
That's the show. Thanks for tuning in.
The next edition of Earth on the Air will explore what people are doing on a grassroots level to reconnect with the political process.
Contributing producers to this program were Dave Fisher, John Loggins, Wendy Wilson, Ted Gates, Judy Witters, Kate Cohn, Peter Young, Jean-Paul Bardou, and Loel Harvey.
Don't forget, this is your program too. Send for a copy of our submission guidelines or find out about any of the pieces you heard.
Write us at Earth on the Air, P.O. Box 4588. Seattle, Washington, 98145.
That's Earth on the Air, P.O. Box 45883, Seattle, Washington, 98145.
Earth on the Air submissions director is Susan Gleason. Our executive director is Craig McDonald. The show is produced and edited by Peter Maloff and Suzanne Tedesco, and engineered by Scott Bergen.
Music was from David Hines, Hogeman Hill, Artists the Spoonman, Jim Page, and Randy.
Production facilities provided by Jack Straw Productions in Seattle and KSER in Linwood, Washington. We had help from KUOW Seattle.
Partial funding was from the Town Creek Foundation and the Seattle Arts Commission.
If you'd like a cassette copy of this program, call 1-800-800-3145. Mention that you'd like program number 18. For the Earth on the Air Radio Works, this is Peter Maloff.
And I'm Janice Kane.